you hear them bells ringing, ringing, joy to all? Hear them singing when it's snowing, I'll be going back to my country home. Christmas time's coming. Ain't you hear them bells ringing, ringing, joy to all? Hear them singing when it's snowing, I'll be going back to my country home. Burning, my old heart's yearning for the folks at home when Christmas time's coming. Can't you hear them bells ringing, ringing, joy to all? Hear them sing when it's snowing, I'll be going back to my country home. Christmas time's coming, Christmas time's coming, Christmas time's coming, and I know I'm going.
Welcome to Mark and Friends. I'm your host, Donna Leland, and today we have the privilege of talking with June Agama. Now, June is going to be a part of our open house, our Christmas open house, coming up December the 13th. And along with that, she's going to be sharing her piece of literature that she wrote. It's also going to be a book signing, and it's called Carol's Closet. And we are going to learn more about her work as well as the medical work that she and her husband do in Ghana. So thank you so much, June, for being a part of Mark and Friends.
Thank you, Donna. It's always a privilege and an honor to speak with you. My husband and I listen to you daily, and we listen to WLUJ, and we just love what you produce to help us stay in love and grow with Jesus.
Well, I certainly keep up to date with you. I watch you on Facebook, and I'm just always figuring out what are the Agamas up to these days. And let's go back and talk about your book, Carol's Closet. What was it that motivated you to share your special and very personal story with other people? And give us a few details about the book.
You know, every story has a beginning or a backdrop. So I'd like to share a little bit about the backdrop. Mm-hmm. I became an author during the pandemic. And the use of closet in the title of my book is significant and a fitting title in my life because I was locked up and locked in. When I wrote Carol's Closet, I felt like that period of silence has been broken and resolved. Oddly enough, through an inadvertent act by our middle daughter, Asaya, a few years ago, she came home from college and was snooping around in my closet. She was looking for information about her mom. She did not know who I am, and she discovered my journals, which she deemed treasures, and she challenged me to tell my story. It was during the 2020 pandemic, and I was tired of watching major cities get blown up, and I decided to write Carol's Closet. Carol's Closet is a journey of faith, and it started in a tiny village, Buxton Friendship, in Guyana, South America. And it truly went around the world because I think God has used me and Carol's Closet to do lots of meaningful work around the world.
So this was your story, your personal journals that you're willing to share with the world. And how do you see this really impacting people who would read your book?
Well, essentially, there are two themes that are distilled throughout Carol's Closet. The first is that we are more alike than we are different. Mm. So why do we spend most of our time magnifying how unique we are, based on the color of her skin or race or ethnicity. I pray that God would help us to understand that we are a human race. Let us capture the tossed salad concept. Many ingredients with their own texture, flavor, and taste, mixed together while maintaining their own individual structure. They create a beautiful, colorful, tasty meal. And the second theme in my book, Carol's Closet, is that God sees, knows, and loves us dearly. I have discovered that people are the same everywhere. We all need love. When we are patient with others, we are able to see beyond their faults. When we are kind, we disarm those who are not. When we express genuine humility, people recognize that and are willing to share their darkest secrets with us. And when we give God the glory He deserves, we are living out the faith that we have been given. And that seemed to be my purpose in life.
That's a beautiful purpose, I tell you, to have that vision of being that connector, connecting people. And I love the point you made. We are one race. All this racism business, it's crazy talk. And I just see it as the enemy trying to divide us and get us off point in that, like you said, we all are the same.
You know, there's that saying, someone once said that no one is exempt from the jagged edge of living in this world. How could we look forward to heaven when everything on earth is hunky-dory? Well, I think that throughout my journey, I have experienced grief, loneliness, rejection, discrimination, and all of those things. And that's part of living in this world. But I think that I was filled with determination.
So you're reframing the whole victim idea. I mean, and you could claim victimhood because of what you've gone through, but you're rejecting that. Is that what I'm hearing?
I've learned to embrace my rich Guyanese American heritage. I'm unapologetically a child of God, a wife, a mother, a lover of people of all nations. I never want to be put in a box. There will never be another person like me. I want to be free to be a product of my slave ancestors and my hard-working parents. And I have finally found my purpose in life.
It's such a place of peace and rest. You're not just living in the past, but you're recognizing it does impact us, but you're moving forward. Tell us a little bit about your growing up years and just some of the struggle that you encountered.
Well, you know, my growing up was like any other, you know, young person. My parents were poor. We lived in a middle class community, surrounded by teachers and doctors and, you know, people who had meaningful work and so on. My parents, however, they were both teenagers when they started having their family, and they did not finish, both of them did not finish high school. But one of the things, as I look back, is that they were two of the hardest working people that I've ever met. My mom used whatever was in her hands to create beautiful things around my home. We lived in an attached roof home with an outhouse, but she created beautiful spaces in that little room, and she was very creative with her hands. She made and knitted stuff that was so beautiful. She made pastry. She cooked well. She sold that pastry so that she could augment my dad's salary. And, you know, just a beautiful, beautiful person. She did everything with class and beauty. And she never knew a stranger. She loved everyone. And I think that that's some of the qualities that I would like to emulate in my life. And my dad, on the other hand, he worked so hard. He was one of the most hardworking people I know. He literally built our home from scratch. You see, we lived in a little hut, and his dream was to, you know, build a big house. And so he would ride his bike about 12 miles where we lived in the village to the main city, Georgetown, and back. That's 24 miles a day, 5 days a week. And on weekends, when he came home, he would encourage his friends and his cousins to help him raise the big house. Apart from that, my dad had the largest vegetable garden in our village. And I remember as a kid just loving it when all the green vegetables came out. And then he had fruit trees all around the yard. And he raised pigs and chickens. Oh, it was just beautiful and iconic as I look back on my life. But for the longest part, you know, longest time, I didn't realize how rich my childhood was.
Mm-hmm. That really is true. You were the rich ones, you know, the people living with the maids and the servants. Getting our brains back to the fact that humble circumstances, that's where the richness is, I think, of Mary and Joseph and where they were at. But they were rich. They were caring for the Messiah, the Savior of the world, even though society would look down on him. So I just think that just gets us into that space where we're just grateful for what we have. And we're willing to say, you know, Lord, from your hand, I accept it. So that is just a beautiful picture, June, of you recognizing what the Lord gave you. Let's talk a little bit now about your life, how the Lord, you know, he brought you to the States and you were able to meet your wonderful husband. And then let's talk about this medical mission journey that I've just so enjoyed watching flourish.
Thank you. Well, most of you and some of your listeners might know that we spent a major part of my life as a public health leader and advocate for the poor. The work that we do with International Health and Development Network, it was by no means something that my husband and I sat down and planned and had a vision for. I tell people all the time that we were reluctant servants. I remember the very first time that we took our young children, all three girls under 5 years of age, to Ghana, West Africa. Mm. My husband was taking us to see his parents and the rest of the family. And we arrived in this village. For 4 days, they were having this, what you call, Durba. Everyone was jubilant and enjoying. These queen mothers and these chiefs and all of their people dressed nicely, and they're giving speeches, just celebrating what God had done for them throughout the year. And we were sitting there, and then someone on the fourth day said, there is a doctor visiting from the United States of America with his family, and we want to see him. And I said to myself, why would they want to see him? And for the first time, Donna, I looked around and I realized that for miles, there were no doctors and no nurses. Mm. And I was thinking, wow, no wonder. So my husband's father, Mr. Ben Agama, he scrambled around and thought, well, where are we going to see these people? Right next to the building was a big mango tree. And so they brought these long benches and put those there. And the people just sat there for 4 days waiting to be seen by the doctor. So the doctor needed a nurse. And guess who became a nurse overnight? Donna, you have to know me. I don't do blood and gore and all that kind of stuff, you know? And so it was just, God has a wonderful sense of humor, because I guess I used adrenaline, because it's like for 4 days, you know, I was there with my husband. And for 4 days, we saw over 500 people. It was just amazing. At the end of the that evening, my husband got sick. And I'm looking around and I'm thinking, the only doctor I know is ill. And I have these three children to take care of. What if they got sick too? And by God's grace, we got on our knees that night and we just cried out to the Lord and said, Lord, you're going to have to help us. We don't know what we're doing here, but please touch my husband's body, help him to be better. And the Lord answered us. And we got together and we said, what did we get ourselves into? We don't know what we're going to do. But, you know, his dad stepped in and said, you know what? You've seen all those people. They'll need, you know, find out, you know, especially the ones that had blood pressure or whatever. Why don't you use the bottom part of my home? We'll triage it and make it into a little clinic.
Mm.
And so that's what we did. And then every year we would go back and take, you know, see people. And also there was a young physician that showed up. And he said that he always wanted to work in this kind of, like in the village setting. And so Dr. Randy Stefanu was our first doctor. Mm. And he came and worked at that clinic for like, I think 4 years or so. Every year we saw over 5,000 people there. He trained the young high schoolers and people up to like a CNA level. We would go back every year and take people from the United States and so on and help him and see all those patients. And then, so we would go to Ghana and then we would go to Latakor, Vumabator, all those little villages. People were so poor, Donna. Many of them did not have water. They didn't have a good home to like lay their heads.
Mm.
So we would use places like the little, like a school. Sometimes the school was just a little hut. Or we would use like a church building or something like that. And we would have to take all of our medical supplies and so on and try to get out of there before it got dark. Because, you know, of course, there was no light. And so we did that consistently. And then the Lord taught us so much. Number one, he taught us that it's not about us. We had to depend on him for everything. And so we depended on him for our health. We depended on him for supplies. We depended on others, you know, to come along with us and so on. And so we did that and we started praying, Lord, what should we do? What should we do? And then we were able to find land about 3 miles away from his father's home. We said, you know, this is it. My husband had just started his practice here in Springfield. And we decided to put God first. And we bought 23.5 acres of land about 3 miles away from where that clinic was. Problem was, the land was virgin land. There were no homes or anything near it. For 3 miles, we had to bring water and light, everything. There were no roads. I cried so many times, Donna, because how do you build a place in the remote areas? You don't have all of the major equipments like we have here. And my poor husband, he would go along, we would be driving along the highways here, and we would go and see the used equipments, and then he would have them break it down and put it in the 40-foot containers. Mm. We would ship them to Ghana, then they'll put it back together. And those were the equipments that we used to bring the water line and you know, move stuff. We were able to build this large, beautiful outpatient building, air conditioned. And when I went there, Donna, I cried because I knew that it wasn't us. It was God. God loved those people enough that he provided the resources and the abilities of those artisans and builders over there to put this beautiful structure up because he loves them, you know?
Yeah.
most of those people make less than $2 a day. And when God intervenes and he does things, he makes it beautiful. You know, I don't care what anyone says that miracles don't happen nowadays. Mm. No, the miracles that we read about in the Bible happens in this world, but we don't spend enough time to really notice or to really acknowledge. And I want to tell the world that the Lord God Almighty has done miracles in people's lives and continues to do it, because I've seen it with my own eyes. And now we have not only the outpatient facility. We went back there a few years later on. After 2008, we opened that building. People were lying on the floors, Donna, because they would walk for miles or take transportation, and they, when they're sick and you treat them, they cannot go back home like over here.
Yeah.
And so my husband thought hard about it and said, you know what, we need to build an inpatient facility. And in record time, we were able to put like a 90-room inpatient facility connected to that outpatient facility. We have a very skilled surgeons and doctors, all 120 plus staff members from Ghana, all native of Ghana.
We're visiting with June Agama on Mark and Friends. She's the author of Carol's Closet. Also, along with her husband, they founded the International Health and Development Network in Ghana, West Africa. Thanks again so much, June, and we look forward to seeing you coming up December 13th here in the studios on 600 West Mason Street in Springfield for our Christmas open house as well as author signing.
I really appreciate partnering with you all here. Wherever we travel, we always listen to you all, and it's part of our journey. Thank you.
And thank you, dear listener, for listening to Mark and Friends. We're a ministry of Great News Media. Have a great day.